The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
And it is the soul of Jefferson.
It certainly is. Talking about the soul of Jefferson, I am here with Mama Jay. Good morning, Janet. How are you?
I am good. I have had an interesting 3 days, which I'll talk about a bit.
Oh, fun. Okay. Yeah. Love to hear about it. Also, we're broadcasting live on KCNR 1460, KCNR1460.com. We're streaming live on KCNR1460.com, we think. Anyway, we are 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, and we are happy to be Jefferson State of Mind.
And I wish it were Jefferson State of Mind for everybody out there. Start thinking about it.
Very much start thinking about it, because we need the Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E.
That's correct.
So we're giving you the message here, folks. We need to start moving along on this thing. There's going to be several things we want to talk about today. And if you have a question or a comment, it's 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. And, yes, we will take your phone calls. Anyway, Janet, you had a couple of things on your mind.
Dates of history. I was a social science major in school, and I always hear people say, oh, I hated to memorize all those dates. There are some dates that are important. July 4th, 1776, when we celebrated the declaration of our independence from Great Britain. D-Day, January 6th, 1944, when we put forth the great effort to reclaim Europe from the Nazi invasion. 9/11/2001, the infamous attack on the World Trade Center. But today we are memorializing Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a date that will live in infamy, the attack on Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by the Japanese. Why do we need to remember this? Because we need to remember that for liberty we need to be vigilant. And on December 7th, 1941, we were not vigilant. And too many people died on that day, and it threw us into a war. Think back. That was 1941. This is 2025. That was 84 years ago. If you were a sailor on a ship in Pearl Harbor on that date, and you were 18 years old, today you would be 102. We do not have many of these heroes left, and we need to honor them and remember them and give them credit for their sacrifice. Whether they lived or they died, it was still a sacrifice. Nobody goes through that without being affected. Remember those who have come before us. Remember those who have given more than their share for our liberty. And then ask yourself, how comfortable is your couch?
Well said, you know, and interestingly enough, also December 7th, 1941 was the day that Jefferson, in its first stab at it, was going to be voted on to become a state.
That's true. The people were lined up there on what was old Highway 99, stopping the traffic.
Well, it was actually going to Congress that day. And because of the attack on Pearl Harbor, it never came to fruition. But, you know, when you think about different dates like Janice talking about, I mean, you look at, you know, June 6th, 1944, that was the date that really turned World War II. I mean, there were battles before then that turned it, but that was the big step of attacking and going into Europe. You know, probably most people have seen the movie, Saving Private Ryan, and the realism of that, at the time there were, some World War II veterans that were still with us, and I had some in my family, and the realism, of that and the battle and the terror and the courage to do that. I mean, the courage to go and fight to end the tyranny that Hitler had brought, and the Japanese basically not too much later, had brought to the world.
And for D-Day, the losses were horrendous, of mm-hmm. course. The loss of one is horrendous. Mm-hmm. But Eisenhower later said that he was surprised that the death rate was that low.
Yeah.
He was ready to sacrifice even more, and he was pleased that not more died. Right. He had expected the death rate to be higher.
So here we are, 2026, going on to 2027 here, or 2025, going on to 2026. I'm a year ahead of myself.
Yeah, don't take my years away from me.
That's it. You know, so I'm getting something from my producer here, yes.
Just giving you a thumbs up on 2026.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I spent the last, well, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I was a chaperone on a field trip with six high school girls. We went, it was connected with one of their classes, and we did something that I swore I would never, ever do again, and that's go to downtown San Francisco. And these girls are involved in a class called BROS, B-R-O-S. It stands for Bernie Rader Office Services. And it is a class at Bernie High School, but it is also a business. And they do printing and copying and all sorts of business services. And the field trip involved going to some businesses and seeing that sort of work in action. It also involved a business in Bernie called Carlton Trees. Les Carlton in Bernie supplies Christmas trees to places you cannot imagine. He has them at the Bellagio in Las Vegas, Union Square in San Francisco, Old Town Sacramento, and many places in between. So the class had gone to see the process of preparing these Christmas trees in Bernie, and then we went to Old Town and Union Square and other places to actually see the trees when they were in their completion. So, a shout-out to Carlton Christmas Trees in Bernie, and also to BROS at Bernie High School. People who are doing the Mike Rowe thing, actually living the commercial business work ethic out there. And I don't know if San Francisco PD is heavily invested in it, but Union Square downtown was clean. It was not infested with homeless and tents and filth. It was a very nice experience, and the decorations were stunning.
Well, it's funny what Gavin Newsom will spend his money on, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I talked to Mark Moser, who's the lead attorney for the Dillon Law Firm, that has the lawsuit to have a preliminary injunction, which would halt and stall Prop 50. And again, folks, you know, those of you who aren't aware, I would say probably 11 counties, including Lassen, Shasta, Siskiyou, Modoc, Plumas, Butte. All those counties voted 70%, maybe 65 to 70% with a no on Prop 50. And Prop 50 still passed with 63.6% of the vote in California. We don't have a say up here. You know, it's getting to be where how much are we going to take? How much of this crap are we going to take? And when you look at what we have as far as a totalitarian government, I mean, tell me one thing in your life. In fact, if you want to call in. Tell me one thing in your life, 530-605-4567, one thing the government doesn't control in your life. I had somebody say to me, okay, well, they don't control my faith. Well, they don't control your faith. Well, what happened during COVID? Was your church open?
Yep.
Oh, guess what? It wasn't? Oh. So, you know, as we look at these things, we have to start understanding, when do we stand up? How do we stand up, and what are we going standing up? And the time is now.
One comment on the redistricting. The Supreme Court just came down with an opinion on the Texas,
yeah.
And they've validated Texas's redistricting based on the fact that they said it was redistricted according to race, and that was not legal. And so the new redistricting is not based on race, and so it will be allowed to stand. However, Californians, we were not based on race redistricting. Ours was strictly partisan. So that Supreme Court decision, I don't think, will affect California.
Amen to that. I know that Mark got his, the PI, he got it, it was gonna be heard on December 2nd by a 3-judge panel, and it wasn't, and it backed up to December 15th is what I just heard.
But he is arguing on a different issue.
Well, he is.
Yeah.
He is arguing on a different issue than you just stated, absolutely.
Yeah. So don't get excited about the Texas decision because
right.
It really does not
absolutely
relate to California.
Right. Absolutely right. Andrew, what say you, sir?
Morning, gang. Hey, regarding the redistricting thing, I understand that nationwide, we're going to win more representatives anyway. But the reason I called is commenting on the lackadaisical way people are nowadays. Last week, I was listening to KPK Radio, and they had a poll question about dual citizenship. And I didn't hear all the responses. I think it was Thursday. But the three I did hear, everybody who called in to comment on it were in favor of dual citizenship. And that baffles me. It truly does. And with that said, we have, I don't know, 80% of our representatives in Congress and Senate have dual residency with other countries. What the heck?
Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that the United States does not recognize dual citizenship. If you become a citizen of the United States, then that is your citizenship. They do not recognize another one. Now, other countries will allow you to be a citizen of both, but I don't think the United States does.
I just talked to somebody recently here in town, and I don't want to say any names because I could have it wrong, but they are a Canadian citizen and a United States citizen.
And that's fine if Canada recognizes it, but the United States will not recognize another
citizenship. Okay, but they have to recognize the American citizenship.
Right.
But they don't recognize the Canadian one. That's the thing. The bottom line is how much more of this are we going to put up with? The bottom line is, when do we finally stand up? And what does that look like? I mean, what does that really look like? You know, again, okay, we have 11 counties that vote on Prop 50. They vote no by an overwhelming margin. And one county, and I'm just using Santa Clara as an example, could, just with their county, could wipe out all those 11 counties and wipe out the no vote and turn it into a yes vote. Because we have no representation. And, you know, we're beating this drum, but it's the only drum. And when you have the most prominent Republican in the Republican Party in state politics advocating a state split, what does that tell you? I mean, you may not agree with what it looks like. I mean, I know that we've come up with one with four states. But the point is that, you know, it's crazy. When you stop and think about this and you stop and think about a position of the Republican Party, and I think he has 7 people in the assembly that have signed on with him, including Heather Hadwick.
I've heard Heather, yes.
And so what does that tell you about the political climate in California, folks?
What
does that tell you?
I will bet there are no Democrats who have signed on with him.
No, and of course that supermajority is a big deal. But I mean, so let me ask you this, Andrew. What do you think about governor? I mean, the governorship with the jurisdiction of a governor, really and truly, how much can he really change and what can he really do? What say you?
Well, his hands are tied. You know, there's things in place. He can only do so much. Executive orders, yes, but they don't carry through to the next admin. There's not much they can do. He can certainly sway it, but if we get a guy in there who wants to set things right, as it were, with the supermajority, he'll be vetoed out. So it's not going to happen. We need to split this flipping state.
Yeah, we do. I mean, there's no other choice, and now we're having the Republicans come alongside of that. Now, here's the other thing. I mean, we're all excited and giddy about about Congress. Okay, we're all giddy about the fact that now we're going to have more people. Some of these seats are going to flip. Did that make a difference to President Trump? Has that made a difference to Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, where the times, places, and manners of elections are under the jurisdiction of the legislature, but Congress may change the regulations as they see fit, basically. I'm paraphrasing that part of it. But when we ask Doug LaMalfa, our congressman, or he was our congressman, I think he, well, you know, it depends on what happens with what Moser does, but he stated that Congress won't get the votes. They don't get the votes. Who cares? California, with Prop 50 passing, California and New York will have 75 Democrats in the House of Representatives out of 432, those two states. Tell me there's not money deals being made. Where's the property? Wall Street. I mean, stop and think about it. You don't think money deals are being made out there, folks? I mean, really, go ahead.
Where do their loyalties lie?
Exactly right.
That is my point. Where, you know, they need to be removed.
Yeah.
They need to be removed.
Yeah, and all this, well, we're going to fix California, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I mean, we've heard gubernatorial candidates say, well, you know, we're going to fire everybody in the agencies. Well, you know, here's the nasty little truth about that. You may have an agency where you don't like it, but the appointments you made as governor could be 3 out of 300 people. And usually
right.
The next guy up the ladder moves up. You know, I mean, that's just the way it works. So when you look at all this stuff, really, again, with laws, the school laws, and we're going to do a whole program on that. But the school laws, when you look at them, they're not mandates. They're not executive orders. They're not, you may do this. They are laws. You can only get rid of a law with a referendum, and only the legislative body and the people can get rid of a law. The governor can't get rid of a law. So I
mean, we need to get back to our foundation. Where,
absolutely.
You go into office to, and who wants to? I don't want to. You don't want to. But we bear the brunt of going into office and return to our businesses. It's not a career. These people have made it careers, and it's very, very lucrative. They've gotten very wealthy on this. Anyway, Janet, I saw the picture of the Christmas tree. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. It was a beautiful sight. San Francisco does still have something to offer.
Thank you, brother. Great call, right. Brother. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We're talking about where do your loyalties lie. Interestingly enough, Trump just pardoned Henry Cuellar. Is he from Texas? From Texas. He is a Democrat legislator, and he was lawfare by the Democrat Party, by the Biden administration, against poor Henry because he stood, definitely from Texas. He stood up against Biden's immigration policy because his district lies on the border with Mexico. And he said, what you're doing is insane. And shortly after that, then they suddenly attacked him and his wife and brought criminal charges against both of them. And Henry was convicted and Trump just pardoned him, unconditional pardon. And after what his own party did to him, Henry Cuellar said, I am an American first, a Texan second, and a Democrat third. So he is not abandoning his party. I mean, how loyal do you have to be to stand up for someone who just worked you over?
Well, the two-party system is only good for the people who are elected because they make the money on it. I mean, let's follow the money, really and truly. I mean, you have a two-party system. You know, a Democrat's bad in a Republican's mind. A Republican's bad in a Democrat's mind. But what about us folks? I know that Thomas Jefferson was adamant about not wanting him to have a two-party system or any kind of party system. It should be up to the people. We keep missing that point. I mean, there's been people say, well, you know, we should start a third party. Well, okay, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I may have said, well, you know, that'll just ruin the Republican Party. Right now, we just heard our congressman say he can't get votes to get rid of voting machines, same-day voting, paper ballots. He said he couldn't do it because Congress can't get him the votes. And if Congress can't get the votes to overturn that and to do that,
Congress has become a big slab of cement.
It has.
It is unmovable. It's unchangeable. It is supposed to be the most powerful branch of our government because it directly represents the people. And they have abdicated their power and their responsibility because they, I don't know, they're more interested in reelection than they are in work. They are supposed to be a huge check and balance on the judiciary, on the executive, and they're not. The executive has become, even though Trump does it, they've all done it, a stamp of executive orders. That's how we're being governed now.
It is, you know.
By executive orders.
And I'm so glad you said that, because you're so right about that. We've been talking about that for 6 months. It is, and then people go, well, you know, President Trump's done some great things. Yeah, he has. I have no, there's a lot of executive orders that I agree with, of course. But the thing is, as Janet's saying, that's not what we do. We're a representative form of government. It's the people. And everybody says, well, you know, it's we the people and that's unconstitutional. We're letting it go that way. And I think the two-party system is a big part of that.
And with the executive orders, the idea is that the president signs it and it's temporary, and then the legislature should say, oh, look, the people are in favor of that. Let's pass legislation reinforcing the executive order. But they don't.
They don't. Yeah, and it was the same thing that they're doing on the voting thing. I mean, we have people have spent millions, probably billions of dollars to get rid of machines. Let's do this. Let's do that. Congress can do it constitutionally with a stroke of a pen, and as per Doug LaMalfa, your congressman at this moment, as per him, we just can't get the votes. And my question was, are you saying that the Republicans are voting with the Democrats? And he says, yep, sometimes.
Yeah, we see it.
Okay, I mean, come on. You know, let's find reality here. Okay, let's fix California. Let's reform. Let's fix California. Okay, tell me how we do that. How do we fix California in its present state? How do we do that? How do we take 80 and 40, 80 in the Assembly and 40 in the Senate to govern, to be representatives of 40 million people?
You don't. California is broken and there ain't enough Gorilla Glue. It is not going to happen. Another issue that people say, well, what we need is term limits. If we could just get some of these people out, term limits. Well, how has that worked for you in California? We have term limits. Has that solved the problem? And I say, you have term limits. You have always had term limits. It's called the ballot box. Don't vote for an incumbent, and then you have term limits. But that's not how they want to look at it. It's always somebody else's fault, somebody else's problem. Somebody else needs to do something. No, it's up to you to do something.
Yeah, you know, not this last Friday, but the Friday before, I had a conversation with Mark Spanagel. That's the chief of staff of Doug LaMalfa. And I think we'll take our break now and come back to that, because I think that's important for folks to know what their own congressman here in this in District 1 is doing. Anyway, my dear, time has come.
4:51. Oh, please, let's get it done.
Out here, Christmas isn't found in bright lights or fancy gifts. It's in the hands that help, the hearts that give, and the neighbors who always show up when it matters most. At Grange Co-op, we're more than a store. We're a family of farmers, friends, and believers who never stop hoping for a better tomorrow. This season, let's gather close and celebrate what truly matters. Love, community, and the magic of being together. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from Grange Co-op.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Join the heartbeat of our county every Monday at 6:35 a.m. on KCNR with the Town Hall Brief during the Sue McClain News Hour. Known for its unbiased reporting, the Town Hall Brief brings clear, local-focused updates and heartfelt discussions that unite our community. Got a story to share? Email townhallbriefs@gmail.com or connect via socials at Town Hall Brief on linktree.com to drop a DM. The Town Hall Brief, your community's voice for Shasta County News, Monday mornings at 6:35 on KCNR.
That better get you moving off the couch.
Yeah, maybe it will. Sounds like a song you'd play if you were taking somebody to the train station.
There you go. Oh, one of the cutest things I saw in the 3 days. We were in Sacramento Old Town, and the train came through, and it was a Polar Express.
Oh,
and so all of these little kids and their mommies and daddies were getting on with their matching pajamas to ride the Polar Express through Sacramento.
Did you get on your pajamas with the girls?
Yes, I did, of course. My fuzzies with my slippers. No, we just watched.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, so anyway, I called Mark Spanigal, who's Doug LaMalfa's chief of staff, not this last Friday, but the Friday before. We had a good conversation, and there's a couple of things that I want to throw out to you folks as a little thinking thing, and that is that when you look at Prop 50, we're hoping that there is a preliminary injunction which would stop it in its tracks until they have more, until it probably gets to the Supreme Court, we would hope, but that's going to be a tough one. And so I wanted to talk to Mark Spanigal for two reasons. One is to see how Congressman LaMalfa felt about state split and what the vibe was in Congress about state split with James Gallagher bringing that forth. Again, it's not maybe his plan and how it looks. It's just the simple fact that it has to be done one way, shape, or form. And the comment I got was that Doug hasn't been talking about that because he is so involved in his campaign. He's really staying strictly with campaigning.
Well, it's every 2 years for the representatives.
But the thing is that with District 1, is he campaigning for the District 1 that he used to have or the District 1 he's
going to
have?
Oh, it's the District 1 that he's going to have.
That's right, the District 1 he's going to have. Because if, in fact, he was he really didn't have to campaign much before. I mean, he was going to win in hands down. In fact, at one point, probably 5-6 years ago, Doug LaMalfa had the highest election rate of any Republican in the Congress.
A Republican in a Republican district.
And now, if that redistrict, so in other words, he's really not, from what I understand there, and James Gallagher goes way back with Doug LaMalfa. I mean, he has been under Doug LaMalfa's tutelage arguably since a senior in high school. So he's really been under that tutelage, and now they're not communicating because James is concerned about the state of California getting it split, et cetera, because that's the only answer. It's the only answer for fair representation. And Doug LaMalfa is concerned about keeping a seat, you know, and we would be in District 2.
Yes.
But see, and Gallagher's terming out anyway.
Yes.
So I guess the point is if your thought process is, well, looks like I'm going to be in District 1, and my old District 1, parts of that is going to be in District 2. That seems to be the way that his campaign's leaning, is that he's trying to get that. And you were saying he has a pretty formidable opponent.
As I understand, okay. Mike McGuire is now in the new District 2, taking over part of it.
Well, District 2 isn't going to be Doug.
Excuse me, one. District 1.
Yeah.
District, you know,
gosh, I know, it gets confusing.
Confusing, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he will be campaigning for Doug LaMalfa's position now against Doug LaMalfa because the two districts have merged. And he's one of the most influential people in the state legislature.
You know, again, I mean, here we have, you know, and then we have the Independent Party, which has grown arguably in the last 10 years quite a bit. Well, not even arguably. It has grown in the last 10 years quite a bit. You know, declined to stay the independent.
Independents are a large percentage of the voters, but they're not organized.
Well, I talked to the leader of that party about, I want to say, a year ago. And we had a conversation because at that time there were some of us that were kind of putting feelers out for a third party. And if you can walk into a party that's already existing and have a turnkey operation where you walk in and just sort of move there, you know, maybe instead of the Constitutional Party, it becomes the People's Party. Well, that sounds...
I don't want to say that one.
but the thing is that we don't... The two-party system is a big problem, and it's becoming more evident in what's going on in California. It seems to be really rising to the surface when you look at what's happening in California and happening in a way that that one party is controlling everything, and the other party kind of goes along with it. It seems like when the Republicans even are in power, they're not in power. I mean, that's why President Trump, I think, has been... had such an impact. What do you say, Janet? I mean...
Well, I'm kind of Jeffersonian on this one. I don't like parties.
I don't either.
And I look at what happens in the European parliamentary system, where they have all of these different parties, and then they're all supposed to get together and cooperate, and they'll join alliances and whatever. And it's a more screwed-up system than what we have here. So I am a Republican, and I am a member of Republican organizations, but I always say I am a reluctant Republican because I do not find them to be particularly functional.
Well, yeah, and that's been the whole bottom line to all this. Here's the elephant and the donkey in the room. The Democrat Party has policy. They have things that they want. Guess what? Their constituents walk in line for that. And maybe I'll sum it up by free stuff. But whatever issue you want to talk about, they all back up their party. The Republican Party has a platform that most of us on the conservative side agree with. It's just that our leadership doesn't do what the party was meant to do, and the Democrat Party is doing exactly what they're meant to do.
Look at the gubernatorial election coming up for California.
Man.
The Democrats can have 75 people run. It doesn't matter because we have the top two, and it's likely that the top two will both be Democrats. So who cares who wins? The Republicans...
You really think that? You really think it'll be Democrats?
Well, that's what they're thinking.
Well, that's what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay,
the
ahead.
Republicans need to be a unified force behind one candidate, making sure that that one candidate is one of the top two. But no, what is the Republican Party doing? They have 15, 16, 17 Republican candidates. Split the vote, folks. The vote isn't a majority vote in California anyway. When you start splitting it, you're not going to win. They should be organized better to at least get one candidate on that top two on the ballot.
Yeah, and you're 100% right on that. And the thing is that thought process is that absolutely a billion percent correct. I was on a Zoom a couple of weeks ago, and that thought process was being brought up with some gubernatorial candidates that were on that call. And their response basically when asked that question is, well, it's really too early yet. We haven't really decided who to get behind yet. And okay, that might hold some water because it isn't for a while, but we're getting closer and closer. And before you know it, it happens. And as we look at the different candidates for the gubernatorial race, I don't know if any of them know what their jurisdiction is. And I've talked to several on the phone, several that I've talked to on Zooms, and I'm telling you, all these great things they want to do is really great, except they can't really do them. Anyway, Janet, you've got the Constitution there.
Oh, no, I was looking at something else for coming up. I just find it very frustrating that the Republican Party in California seems so defeatist all of the time. Well, we can't do that. We can't do that. And I remember going to the Republican Party headquarters when we were pushing for the state of Jefferson, and they didn't even want to hear it. They weren't even interested because they were so enmeshed in keeping their status quo, no matter how small a part of California it was, rather than expanding their horizons, thinking, well, you know, if we had our own state, maybe we would even have more power. But they don't look at it that way.
Well, I think the thing is that, again, I mean, when you go into office and you've got one home and you come out of office and you got 12, you know, how does
Let's
that
see.
Work?
President Obama was a community organizer in Chicago, and then he became a state legislator, and then for a couple years, he was a federal senator. And when he left office after 8 years as president, he bought a home in Martha's Vineyard, a home in New York, a home in Chicago, and a home in Hawaii. Poor man. I don't know. The salary was less than $500,000 a year. Where did the money come from? Does no one ever care? They say, well, where'd the money come from? But nothing ever happens.
Well, the thing is it, are we more interested in complaining or doing something? Okay, let's talk about doing something. Okay, well, the folks in the North State, I would say the state of Jefferson, voted 70% no on Prop 50. The folks in Redding, California voted no, I think it was 70%. On Measure A to give more money to a city council that doesn't know what they're doing with the money here in Reading. You know, as we continually look and trickle down to local government, which really should be the hub of the power, our local government right now, a lot of people really don't understand what the jurisdiction of some of our offices are. We had Clint Curtis in last week. And if you go back and listen to, Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E, on the archives of KCNR1460.com, you will find that archive from last week. And Clint was very, very good, very precise in letting people know where his jurisdiction was.
What he can and cannot do.
Can and cannot do. And, you know, that's such a, I mean, I'm so tired of hearing platitudes and the BS that these people sling when they run for office. I'm tired of it. Most people are tired of it. But how do you get rid of it? Well, you get them out. You get them out.
You vote them out. You use your term limits ability and say no.
Yeah, and you can't vote them out if you live in the North State.
That's
I'll
right.
say that again. You cannot move them out in the present condition, and there is no governor that can change the present condition in the legislative body, which has control over the laws being made. I want to say that again because people just don't seem to get that. The governor is not President Trump. He doesn't have Article II powers. He doesn't have the power that President Trump has. But, you know, you can go ahead. I mean, we heard again one candidate saying that he wanted to fire the people in the agencies. He has power to do that, but not all of them. And how do you know who's really handling what? We had just in a smaller example of that, Toller was our ROV officer. Who was running the ROV office? Can you say Francesca?
It was not he.
Francesca.
Yes, exactly. During the last few days, the Supreme Court caused a 6.0 earthquake in Washington, D.C., and the Democrats are scrambling because this was bad news for them. And that is, the Supreme Court said, yes, we are going to take up the issue of birthright citizenship, which could change everything. Now, they haven't made a decision. But the mere fact that they have agreed to look at the issue means that there is interest on the part of at least some of the judges to change that current interpretation of the 14th Amendment. Excuse me. And you hear the people on CNN and MS News, is that what it is now? And they say, but the 14th Amendment is very clear, and everybody who's born here is a citizen. And no, it's not very clear. And they recite it, and they say, well, there it says, but they are forgetting the most important phrase in the 14th Amendment. And that is, I can't find it. All persons born or naturalized in the United States, And then they stop and they say, well, there it is. All people born. It's very clear. How about we continue reading? and subject to the jurisdiction thereof.
No.
And that's the basis.
That's the sticking point right there.
That's where SCOTUS is going to hear this.
Absolutely. And it's about time, because really and truly, the jurisdiction thereof is their parents. The jurisdiction of a child is their parents. That's the jurisdiction thereof. And if your parents are citizens of Mexico, then you are a citizen of Mexico. You are not a citizen of the United States.
And there has been a precedent case, but that precedent case hinged on whether or not one of the parents was a citizen or a legal resident or whatever. So if the Supreme Court can get together five people with a half a brain each, they will interpret this correctly and correct the mistake that was made with the last decision.
Exactly. And the mistake was never in that amendment. The mistake was in the interpretation.
Exactly. Yes. And the Democrats are scared silly, because that was why they kept letting in all of these immigrants, because then they had babies here, and it was increasing what they thought would be the Democrat voting population.
Let me ask you this. President Obama basically falls under that. He wasn't born here, but he was the president. So what I heard at the time, when there was a big thing about the Obama birth certificate, it was just everybody was into that. There was hundreds of reporters. There was hundreds of reports. A lot of evidence that Barack Obama was not a citizen of the United States and born that way. However, a lot of the Republican Party that I had talked to, and I had talked to people who were in Congress and other people who had talked to people that were even senators at the time, was the issue that, what would that mean? Would that mean everything that President Obama did, by the time that they went through the process of showing his birth certificate to be not naturally born in the United States of America and born somewhere else, if in fact that was the case, then I would submit the question of, okay, then what happens to all the laws that were passed during that time? And the Republican stance didn't go after that because they were cowards. They didn't go after it because they thought that retroactively, even some laws that were good laws, everything would be wiped out. So again, I go back to, if in fact the Supreme Court does pass this, what if there's people who are in office right now that had passed laws, introduced bills, whatever the case may be, isn't there an argument there that the laws could now be retroactively rescinded?
Well, we also have the question of the auto pen. Did Biden sign things, or did he not, or was it done by auto pen without his approval? Do we go back and negate everything that he signed? I don't know. But frankly, that's too big a bag of eels.
It is
to deal with.
It is, and that's why I think they'll ignore it.
I don't.
I mean, they might.
But they can. They can change the interpretation now, but not retroactively go back and change everything that was done.
Okay, let me ask you this. Okay, that makes sense. But let me ask you this. Okay, let's say that Supreme Court passes this. Will that be a ruling, a decision, or an opinion?
It will become the way things are done, because they're actually basing it on the interpretation of the Constitution.
Okay.
So there would not need to be a law.
Okay.
They are just saying the Constitution says this.
What I'm saying is would the compliance be of the states? Would the states be forced to comply, or would they have to adopt an opinion? That's my question.
I
don't know either.
I can't give you
somebody,
a definite answer.
I'll call Chris Ann Hall here pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Mark Baird, know. But the thing is that that's something really we need to ask ourselves, folks.
But it is a good news in that the Supreme Court is going to even look at it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Democrats were hoping that the court would say, nah, not worth our time. It's already been decided, but according to them, nope. I think it only takes four justices to agree to look at it. So that doesn't mean that they have a majority who will vote in favor of correcting it.
Right.
But at least.
And we also have a time frame, which is probably infinite.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, too. And that's why I asked the question I just did. And I mean, this, when you look at what's going on with Reynolds versus Sims, that was a court case that culminated one man, one vote. Now, okay, if this is what it's supposed to be, this is what our opinion, well, that was an opinion, because the state of California, even though in 1964, this was the opinion of the Supreme Court, they didn't adopt it until 1966. If it was a ruling, they would have to adopt it. So I get a little confused about that, because I'm trying to figure out at what point is there jurisdiction of the state to say, eh, we accept that or we don't. Now, some of the rulings they've had, or even like you're saying, constitutional, Roe versus Wade. Okay, they're just saying that the jurisdiction, we always go back to that word, don't we? The jurisdiction is that of the states. So if the state of California wants to have abortion and the state of South Dakota doesn't, then they have to do it by the states.
That's true. Yes, they have to pass a state law.
Would this still be the same thing? Would it be the same thing? And I think that's some of the things that, you know, I know people are, you know, look at this and they go, well, you know, that's a lot to swallow. Well, we better start swallowing some of it.
But Roe versus Wade, the decision by the court actually said it's up to the states to decide.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. So this one would not be up to the states to decide whether or not there will be birthright citizenship. Okay. There cannot be, because it is not constitutional. So I don't know exactly how.
I don't either.
I'm sorry. My law degree got lost.
I'm with you, darling. I'm with you. 100%.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that happened is the state of Florida is seriously looking at abolishing property taxes, which is an issue dear to my heart. How can we, in our founding documents, say that you have the right to life, liberty, and property, and then you have to pay rent on your property in order to keep it?
Well, there's a lot of people in California. I knew a couple of them that decided to go a little bit rogue and not pay their taxes like forever and weren't paying any taxes, and I think they're still in prison.
Yeah, so, you know, no, I mean, they wouldn't be in prison. They just wouldn't have
their
property anymore.
Oh, no, this guy went to prison. He went to prison because he wasn't paying any taxes at all.
Oh,
he
at
thought
all.
That, well, okay. I mean, and if you stop and think about it, but
the IRS and the federal government can put you in prison for not paying income tax. But California can't put you in prison for not paying property
taxes.
Take
your property.
Take your property. Yeah,
you know,
to pay
again,
the rent.
Okay, so, all right. Well, the point is that we, you know, the more we peel back this onion of the state of California, and that's the whole thing, folks, and I know we harp on it and we talk about it all the time, but man, you guys gotta understand, the jurisdiction of the state's powerful. And California has some real power over your life, more power over your life than the federal government does.
And heads up, the state of Jefferson Constitution requires no property tax.
Amen to that.
And where does the money come from? Well, obviously, it will have to come from someplace else. If we are going to have services, they have to be paid for. But perhaps we have too many services. And in Florida, they don't even have an income tax. So the only thing left would be, I don't know, corporate taxes, consumption taxes.
Well, they still have federal income tax, though.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the state of Florida.
State, yeah.
How are they going
to
finance themselves? Right. What you buy, you pay a tax on. The more you buy, the more tax you pay. The less you buy, the less tax you pay.
You know, and I know that Siskiyou Steve has always advocated, and, you know, I certainly don't disagree with him, that we just don't send the taxes in and keep it in the county. Well, okay, find me a county that'll do that. I love the idea, but how do we get those people who are elected? How do we get those people to do what we want them to do? I mean, we have, you know, right now here we have the big thing on the medical school and all that good stuff. I applaud them all for trying to find, you know, a solution. I guess the thing is that a lot of the solutions take a while. When you're doing them honestly and legally, they take a while. But the other side doesn't care about that. They just do it. I mean, how many of these school laws are absolutely atrocious?
They're terrible.
They're terrible. I mean, they're terrible. I mean, you know, it's okay to have sex if you're 5 years old as long as somebody uses a condom.
Well, you
basically, that's what it says.
You have to learn how to put it on a banana. Because that's part of the training in school.
I'm glad you didn't say cucumber. Okay.
So. Banana. Frankly, the schools are broken.
Yeah.
And again, not enough Gorilla Glue. The answer is so obvious. Why do we have public government-supported schools? Why do not we return them to the control of the people, the parents, the communities? We only have public schools because we had a huge influx of immigration at the beginning of the 20th century, and they wanted to indoctrinate these people into the American system, and the way to do that was to put them into a school that taught everybody the same thing, and to train them to work in the new industrialized factories. And that's where our public school system came from. Before then, we did not have public schools. It's a relatively modern invention.
Yeah, you know, and when you, there is a public school exit. Dran Reese is the president of that. It's called Public School Exit. And I also suggest you look at the Salt and Light Council. Salt and Light Council. If you search engine either one of those, you're going to get a lot of good information on schools. And they advocate, you know, pulling your kids out of public school. Now, President Trump is doing something about the schools now. He's trying to...
disbanding the Department of Education.
Well,
no, he's not disbanding it. Right. He's defunding it.
Defunding it. Okay, so, but what happens in the states? You know, again, what happens in the states?
Well, the whole point of defunding and completely reducing the size of the federal Department of Education is that it has no authority at all except to distribute federal funds to those schools who are willing to take it and play by the rules if they take it. State has the complete authority over schools and education.
Right.
Not the federal government.
Right, that's right.
Yes.
That's kind of where I was going, yeah.
In our State of Jefferson Constitution, that's exactly what we do, is give education back to the communities and the parents.
Absolutely.
To create whatever educational facilities and programs they want.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's been so much of an issue. I mean, we have, you know, a lot of great organizations, a lot of folks out there fighting for, you know, public school. One of the big arguments is what if you're a single mom or single dad?
And here we go again. Please,
family unit.
Would someone just take over the responsibility for me so I don't have to think about that sort of thing? I will just send my kid to school, and then they'll come home, and they will have been fed breakfast and lunch and bring home a sack dinner. And then I, as a parent, can just not have to worry about it. Well, you as a parent have that responsibility, just as you as a voter have the responsibility to do term limits by the ballot box. I am so tired of people wanting liberty, wanting the benefits of liberty, but not the responsibilities of liberty. And we have been told from the beginning that a moral and informed populace is necessary for the kind of government that we have. And if you are not willing to be informed, then you should just go sign up for some commune and let someone take care of you.
Yeah, you know, and that's such a great point. I mean, that is such a great point. When you look at the urban areas, exactly what Janet just explained happens in all of them. And when you look at a rural area where the parents may have a little more control, the school boards have a little more power, you look at those kinds of things, even there that seeps in. No matter what you do, that's seeping in. And, you know, again, I just don't see anything government funded. I don't see how that helps. How does that help anything?
I was recently in a room of 9 people, and the subject came up of the Civil War. And I was the only one who could give the date that the Civil War started.
Wow.
Are we educated? Now, what difference does that make? It's just a date. Well, you better be able to put the dates together because... as Chris Ann Hall has always said, those who do not know history are doomed to repeat its mistakes. And what was the mistake of the Civil War? Well, you better know, and you better know when it happened and how it all came together. And in this instance, it was a context of why Fort Point was at the Golden Gate Bridge location.
Right.
And what was going on in California at the time
right.
that made it important for Fort Point to be there. And, of course, it's the gold rush
right.
and the Civil War and
right.
not wanting the Confederates to get the gold from California, blah, blah, blah. Those things matter.
Yes, they do.
It's our history. It is what we have to look back on to make sure that we don't make mistakes again.
You know, and I've heard from people, well, you know, people mostly don't want to hear all that stuff. Well, you know what, folks? We need to start hearing all that stuff. We need to be thinking about a lot of things.
We need to be hearing about the state of Jefferson and a state split and why it has become very important, because they don't make enough Gorilla Glue otherwise.
There is not enough Gorilla Glue, as Mama J says, to fix California. Reform California? Okay, show me something concrete how that happens. You increase representation to what? These are questions that we've been asking, we'll continue to ask. And, you know, it's just one more reason why time has come.
For 51, and I'm trying to get it done.
Amen to that.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Attention.